All right. We are going to call the Health and Human Services Budget Division together for Thursday, April 9th. We have five bills to get through today. Kind of a light load for this time of the year. Had a couple of bills not quite ready and had to get pulled. But we're going to start with Senate File 1272, Senator Herr. Welcome to the committee. And maybe, I'll just tell members the reason why we had a limited agenda is because we can't come back tonight either. We, of course, have the State of the State that I'll be attending. Senator Herr, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair, members. In front of you, you had a little small pamphlet package, all pinned together. And I outlined the specification of the bill and then talk about DHHS. And then there's a little experiment package in the back. I'll let my testifier explain later the package in the black back. But Senate File 1272, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Service Division has been serving Minnesota family for 35 years, and 40% of the division staff are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing. The past budget cut to the Department of Human Services puts the division program on hold and closed their offices in Rochester and Bemidji. Children and adults who are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing were put on the waiting list for service. This bill, 1272, would address the issue by, one, increasing the base appropriation for direct services to deafblind of children, both children and adults, and two, increase the mental health service to the community, three, increase the division ability to deliver, four, pressing service to engage the community, and five, continue to find way to deliver service statewide effectively. And Mr. Chair, I have an amendment for
this
bill.
Yes, we're kind of scrambling trying to see if we have that amendment. Do you?
An A2 amendment.
Wasn't copied.
Okay, we're getting copies of that right now. Maybe we can just press on and have the testimony of your testifiers.
Okay. Sure. What's with me here is Jason Valentine, a member of the Commission of Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing, Minnesota. So we can begin with Jason Valentine. Jason Valentine.
Mr. Valentine, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jason Valentine, and I'm a governor-appointed member of the Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. I want to thank Senator Herr for carrying this bill, and I urge you to support increased funding for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Division, which is different than the commission that I serve. The Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Division provides services to Deaf and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans and their families as they interact in the public, private, and nonprofit spheres. Their services are a critical resource for families around the state and help both the public and private sector ultimately save money. However, their budget has declined and so have their services, which means that families are suffering. Deaf workers are needlessly losing their jobs and or housing. This is needlessly costing the state, local government, and private businesses money, especially in the greater Minnesota areas. Often, deaf Minnesotans and older adults who are losing their hearing contact DHHSD when they run into trouble communicating with somebody. So you can imagine that a loved one is rapidly losing their hearing and lives in Bemidji or Rochester, one of the communities that have seen their regional offices close. They're having more and more trouble communicating with their employer because they can't hear what's going on in a meeting, or they get pulled over for a speeding ticket and can't hear what the officer is saying, and they think they're being belligerent. They could lose their job, or they could be arrested. We have technology labs. Maybe there's something there that could help them hear in meetings or communicate with their boss. DHHSD talks to deaf and hard of hearing people about how to communicate with the police, and they also conduct training for police department. These are just two examples of the small things that DHHSD can do that make a huge difference for deaf and hard of hearing Minnesotans around the state, their employers, and local governments. Unfortunately, with budget cuts over the years and no increases, DHHSD has been cutting back on services. There are now six offices to serve the state instead of eight. There's a sheet in your packet, I believe it's either the second or the fourth sheet, and you can look how far away each district is from your regional offices. There's a list of six of them. In some parts of the state, it's a four-hour drive one way to the office. This bill would require an assessment be done on how to best serve the entire state and see if the offices are distributed as we need them to best serve the needs of the state population. The technology labs at DHHSD are also falling behind. We're supposed to have technology that could help a deaf or hard of hearing person communicate. They're supposed to allow Minnesotans to come and test out various options so they can figure out what will work best for them and potentially their employer before purchasing anything. However, we haven't had funds to purchase any new technology in at least 2 years. At this point, we don't have anything where we could download new apps that could facilitate communication. How can we be a source for advice on the best options and a place to try them if they can't afford to even purchase one iPad or a tablet per office? So how much is this costing Minnesota families and employers? It's an example of how a small investment on the state's part could save a lot of money in the public and private sectors and for families across the state. This is a good bill and a critical investment. It helps fill critical voids that currently exist and requires that there be a plan for the future. Please support it today and these funds in your budget. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Valentine. We do have the A2 amendment that could be passed out now, or okay. We can continue with your testimony, your preference is, Senator Hurd.
Yeah, I could insert in the amendment now. The amendment mainly rearranged the content of a Section 1, Item Number 4, change some wording and analyses, and then kind of categorize it. To renumber it, rearranging it, and then delete the titles on Section 2, delete the word deaf and hard of hearing. So that's pretty much the scope of the amendment. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move this amendment.
Senator Hurd moves the A2 amendment. Any questions? We're getting a new copy of the bill. We lost the last few lines of the language. And lines that the amendment changes, so now members should be able to follow a little better, I think. Any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, Senator Hurd, did you have additional testimony?
Yes, Mr. James Bill, a father of a deaf and blind child.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
My name is James Beal.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Senator Laurie, for allowing me to speak here today. My name is James Beal. I live in Lakeville, and I'm here to testify on behalf of my 4-year-old son, Adrian, and my wife, Judy, about the value of the Community Intervener Program offered through the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Division. My testimony is, I think, page 3 of your packet, in case you'd like to follow along and see a photo of AJ. To start, I'd like to say that I was surprised to discover that there is a waiting list in the state for families who qualify for an intervener right now. From our first contact with this program, with Adrian still being very young, and up until today, I'm convinced of its critical benefits. In our personal situation, we knew through a complicated pregnancy that AJ would be born needing attention. We learned after his birth he has CHARGE syndrome. And in a nutshell, CHARGE is a set of disabilities that affect eyes, ears, nose, heart, digestive system, sensory processing, and developmental delays. But many children with CHARGE exceed expectations. And we have followed a roadmap of surgeries, therapies, and various procedures to help him be healthy. Importantly, AJ is both visually and hearing impaired. His hearing loss is measured at moderate to severe, and exactly what he sees is still unknown to us. But he seems to be a happy kid now, and there's still a long road ahead, though. AJ clearly benefits in key ways when skilled people spend direct time with him. So let me reiterate how specialized this communications training is that community interveners provide. Imagine the difficulty of explaining to a toddler or infant such as how to ask for something or how not to touch a hot stove, when being able to show them visually or tell them with words are not reliable methods of communication because they're deafblind. In our case, our intervener, Mary, has contributed in various ways. She often creates games or other techniques to help AJ reach certain milestones. And these are things we probably wouldn't have thought of on our own as parents. Because of AJ's sensory limitations, he often struggles with watching, listening, touching, or understanding things, and we often find ourselves working to get his attention or trying to communicate with him when he's acting overwhelmed. With our intervener, AJ gets chances to see and practice new communication methods with a trained person. We as parents have often continued or adapted these approaches after Mary leaves throughout the week. Through their training, as well as experience with other families, community interveners are a direct service to the child, as well as a conduit for helpful knowledge and even motivation for us as parents. And research and stories from other families back this up for me. So in these few minutes today, I cannot be comprehensive with my story, but speaking as a person who runs a small business to a group of folks who run a very large business, I can comment on what I see as the ROI of the return on investment of this program. Even a few hours per week provides specialized deafblind-focused engagement for the child. This engagement serves AJ demonstrably these few hours and also helps inform us as parents. And lastly, as prepared parents, we have leverage to help AJ fit more seamlessly in society, which is our wish for him. So I see community interveners as able to create multipliers of value, first with one individual, then with one family, then with a circle of friends and providers, and out into the community. And I hope the goal of greater access to these services can be made to happen through your understanding and support as state leaders. And one comment about the packet that you received, you'll notice that there's an activity that I tried as a new parent of a deafblind child, and it's to put on a blindfold and earplugs at the same time and to try doing even the simplest task. And it illustrates a bit of what a deafblind child is born into, their circumstances, and also something that an adult would face every day. So thank you again, Chairman Lurie, and other esteemed members of the committee for the opportunity to address you about this very important program.
Thank you, Mr. Beal. Any questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Herr, anything to add? Otherwise, I'd
encourage your support of this bill and encourage the layover of this bill. All of us have some form of disability or another. Some are visible and some are not. I'm very honored to be able to carry this bill for the deaf and deafblind and hard of hearing community. So,
is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer additional testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1272? Seeing none, Senator Herr moves that Senate File 1272 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion. On that motion, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lurie, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File 139. This is a change in the governance structure for Minsure. We've been on a little bit of a path with this this year, over the last couple of years, truthfully. We introduced this early on in session. It's Senate File 139. We had a first hearing. I was questioned quite a bit about why we were moving ahead with this idea before getting advice from our esteemed Office of the Legislative Auditor, out of respect for members who had concerns about making sure that we were on the right course with this proposal. We did kind of put this on hold for a while and waited till we got the OLA's report. And with the OLA with a very different set of tools for trying to track how the rollout of Minsure went, came to the same basic key three recommendations, that is to make the line of authority run through the legislature and directly to the governor so that we have that open, transparent accountable governance structure that the state of Minnesota and our citizens deserve and expect, and make sure that Minute has the ability to manage the IT infrastructure, and that we pay brokers and navigators in a fair manner to make sure that we have the a sister network out there to give individuals trying to find the right insurance product for themselves and their families, that we have the sister network capable of helping them in that endeavor. So that's that gave us a great deal of confidence that we were on the right track, and we continued with this bill, and I have it before you today. I'll step you through it quickly. There are a couple of amendments that I'm aware of, but I'll step through the bill and then get to amendments, I think. So Section 1 designates the Department of MNsure as a department in the state government. Section 2 adds the commissioner to the list of positions, capped at 133% of the governor's salary. Section 3 is an amendment we added in Commerce, which ensures that rates are published 30 days before any open enrollment period and in the upcoming open enrollment period and future ones. Section 4 changes the definition of board and makes it a commissioner. Section 6 gets rid of a lot of the things that were needed in order to make it function under a board. So it's now subjected to the legislative auditor, just like any other state agency. It gets rid of the specific laws to apply conflict of interest and statement of economic interest, and gifts by lobbyists are prohibited. It subjects it to the open meeting law, and it subjects it to the minute services chapters of law. But that's to bring it in line. All of those still apply, but they apply in the same manner that applies to other state agencies, so we don't need to specifically address it any longer as we convert it into a state agency. Section 7 eliminates the board of directors and requires that, though, that the new department maintain the advisory committees and build other ones as needed. It makes certain that those advisory committees are subject to the open meeting law, and it requires that they meet at least on a quarterly basis. Section 8 is the responsibilities and duties of MNsure. There are several subdivisions here. Subdivision 1 strikes the reference to a separate compensation plan for directors and managerial staff, and eliminates the power for MNsure to establish a budget. Of course, that would run through the legislature just like every other state agency. Subdivision 3 establishes an insurance producer incentive program to compensate brokers. Subdivisions 4, 5, 6, and 10 are really striking obsolete language, changing references and dates to bring this into proper form. Subdivision 7 changes references also, but it also strikes a requirement that MNsure establish and maintain an agreement with Office of Minute Services for Information Technology. That's covered when we get rid of the exemption. Subdivision 8 changes references and strikes the super expedited rulemaking authority that they needed to get going in that very first year, but it still gives them expedited rulemaking authority. Just to remind members, that's about a six-month process rather than the standard rulemaking, which is about a two-year process, and they do need to be able to be able to get through rulemaking in that six-month time frame in order to continue to function. Subdivision 11 prohibits MNsure from certifying, selecting, or offering products and policies of coverage other than qualified health plans or dental plans. This was another amendment that was added in Commerce in reaction to some concerns about possible expansion. That prohibition does expire in 2018. Section 9 changes references and strikes obsolete language. Section 10 specifies that the MNsure account is created in the state government revenue fund instead of the other special revenue fund, and requires that MNsure would follow the same procedures for every other state agency, and that funds for the operation of MNsure are appropriated by the legislature. Sections 11 and 12 are changing references. Section 13 specifies that the community assister partners and insurance producers shall be paid an application assistance bonus of $70 for each applicant the partner or producer assists in successfully enrolling medical assistance. So this is $70 for either MA or Minnesota Care enrollees for brokers or navigators. And Section 14 requires the Commissioner of Commerce and with an amendment, DHS and MNsure to develop a proposal to allow small employers the ability to receive the small business healthcare tax credit if they're wanting to pursue that. Section 15 repeals the Legislative Oversight Committee once we subject them to the entire legislative process. I don't think we need that additional oversight. We will have the same oversight we have over every other agency. Section 16 is the effective date, and that's the bill. So then we had the fiscal note. I just got at 8 o'clock this morning. Most of these costs are associated with the paying brokers and navigators the $70 application fee. With that, I stand for questions.
Well, thank you.
And actually, I'll go ahead and I'll move the A23 amendment. This is mostly a technical amendment,
okay,
and we can hand that out. I do have an oral amendment to the A23 that we caught at the last minute that maybe
Senator Lloyd, we're passing it out.
Ms. Kavanaugh could help me with.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Chair, can I just ask a quick question while that's...
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lloyd, going back to page 17, that subdivision 11, product lines.
Yes.
Can you just give me a little more? I'm just kind of curious about it because it talks about, you know, not allowing them, they're prohibited from offering these other products, but then it's sunset, so it goes away. So why aren't we just prohibiting them? Why are we putting it an expiration date on that?
Senator Lloyd.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, so this is something that we should take a look at a later date. We might likely extend it again, but I don't think that we should just make decisions that last forever. They might find a way in future years to actually take a look at some other product lines. That was sort of in line with what the Commerce Committee thought should be done. So make sure that nothing's happening for a few years till July of 2018.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, what kinds of other products were they, what are they envisioning? I mean, are they going to sell car?
No, they're not envisioning anything at this point. There was a, you know, they a subcommittee of the board did some tours and, you know, talked to folks around the state, and apparently one of the things that was brought up was this, and they put it in a slide that was a presentation to the full board, and it raised some red flags. We're in no way, shape, or form ready for them to be expanding at this point. Sort of the whole, everybody agrees, focus on fundamentals, get the core right before even considering any of this. And so this is just making sure that we do that and focus on those fundamentals. We'll come back and have conversations. So there's no plans to do anything. I don't think there ever was any plans to do anything else, but that's sort of the history, as has been explained to me.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, I'll just say it seems odd that there are no plans. There's nothing envisioned, and but we're still making this prohibition expire. I mean, we're still putting that. And I think we all know that, you know, we pass legislation here, and we all know that in 2 years, in 1 year, in 6 months, or whenever we're in session, it can always be changed. So I guess it just seems strange that we have this expiration on this when there's, quote-unquote, nothing planned, you know. So just kind of odd.
Senator Benson.
Yes. Mr. Chair, and to Senator Lori's point, the board was sort of in a brainstorming mode of looking for possible additional sources of revenue, and that's what got people's antenna going, and that's why this is here. I disagree with the expiration. I think they should have to come to us. And so I think going forward, we need to get rid of this, and we need to make a decision if we want Minsure to be able to sell additional products, not have it expire and be permissive. And so when we go through the amendment process, that is something I will be proposing. There's a lot of change coming. I'd just as soon retain more control than less at this point.
Senator Lori, you want to move the – are you ready to move your amendment,
yes,
to
A-23? Yes, I'll move the A-23 amendment.
Senator Lori moves the A-23 amendment. Is there any questions? Senator Lori, do you want to go
and
through
it? And then I'd like some help from Ms. Kavanaugh to get an oral amendment to this.
Ms. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair and members, just add to the amendment, page 22 – line 17, delete commerce and insert human services.
So, Mr. Chair, members, we have the oral amendment that on line 136, page 22, delete.
Line 17.
Line 17.
Say
it again. We did it one more time.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members, we just need to add this, so we're not, you know, to the amendment. Page 22, line 17, delete commerce and insert human services. It's just an additional commerce that we missed and needs to be changed to human services.
So we'll move that
this
oral
have,
amendment.
This would have,
or we'll incorporate that into your amendment,
yes,
Mr. Chair?
I would incorporate that oral amendment into the A-23 amendment, and the purpose of that is to have DHS actually requesting the waiver, and what that would do is remove the commerce fiscal implication here. Commerce was going to add an FTE to look at this waiver and things, and we were talking about it, and truthfully, this is something that DHS does. You know, they are have a whole federal relations department, and they apply for waivers routinely, and so we're taking commerce out of the lead role. They're still going to be in consultation with commerce because we have to try to figure out how to make this allowance for small employers to qualify for the credit work. And so there is some work to be done here, but this would remove the commerce fiscal implications. So with that, I'd move the A-23 amendment.
Is there any questions on the A-23 amendment? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair. Could we get a little bit of an explanation? I'm just trying to engross. I understand that you said it's technical.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, that's a fair question. This is deleting Section 7 and replacing it. This is the advisory committees. It still does the same thing as I described. It's just that the changes were significant enough in the language that a replacement of that section was warranted. So this requires the commissioner to maintain the advisory committees, make sure they're subject to the open meeting law, ensures that they meet a minimum of quarterly, and give the input to the commissioner, as I described. So it's just a replacement of that section, but it does the same thing as I described. And then in the addition at the end, including the oral amendment that was added, removes commerce from the lead role in applying for the waiver for the shop exchange and access to those tax credits. And then Section 15 that's added actually is just making clear that we have a transition section of law for when we transfer duties between agencies, and we're just making clear technically that that section does apply to this transfer of powers and duties from the board to this new state agency.
Is there any other questions on the A-23 amendment? Senator Lori renews his motion for the A-23 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. So moved. Senator Lori, do you have the only amendment that you have?
Stand for questions. Other amendments?
Well, Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have the A-24 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves the A-24 amendment. It's being passed out. Senator Rosen, and explain to us.
Yes, kind please. Of that'd be great.
What
and
it looks like.
While it's being passed out, I'd first like to say, Senator Lori, I haven't looked at this bill for a long time, and you've done a tremendous amount of work on this bill since you started, so I appreciate it. The amendment that's coming forward deals with the governance of creating a whole new executive steering committee. And as you remember, members, that was a big problem when the bill was going through the first time off the floor. We were trying to get the executive steering committee, which has, frankly, been problematic, I would assume, is correct in saying that it's been an issue. So this is this bill, this A24 amendment, is to create a whole new governance committee, or steering committee, I should say. And if everybody has it, I can just go through it. I do have an oral amendment to the A24, though. That would be to strike on page 1, lines 31 through 34, because it's basically redundant. It's already taken care of in line 29 and 30.
Change that a little bit because you went a little too far.
1 and 32.
Excuse me, 32 to 34 is what I'd like 32. To make an oral amendment to.
Okay.
Delete.
1. Senator, why don't we have Ms. Kavanaugh help us a little bit
with
this?
Senator and members, on lines 31, strike everything after 15, so, and strike 32.
31 to 32, okay.
Pardon? No. Oh, so, and then put after 15, delete lines 32 to 36. So on lines 31 to 32, it should now read page 15, comma, delete lines 32 to 36.
Okay. On that oral motion, Senator Lord.
Well, so, yeah, I would think that we should incorporate that. This was a kind of a the page 15 reference was kind of a placeholder saying that we needed to do something with an executive steering committee, make sure that DHS did have a real say in how the IT system is rolled out and how the improvements to it are prioritized. And with this executive steering committee structure that is in the A24 amendment, we no longer need that placeholder language that talked about just making sure that DHS consulted with the new commissioner of Minsure. I think we can delete that section that was in anticipation of doing something more in line with the executive steering committee. And I will say this executive steering committee in the A24 is in line with what the OLA recommended as well. The OLA, this wasn't one of the key recommendations that was on the blue sheets in the front pages of the OLA report, but when you read it, it said that one of the things that really started to help Minsure turn the corner was when they established this executive steering committee that consisted of two members from Minsure, two members from DHS, two members from MNIT, and one county member. And this seven-member executive steering committee really took the reins and helped guide the IT development and made the last open enrollment significantly better than the first, and we should empower them to continue to do their work and make the next open enrollment even better yet than the second. And so I guess this would get us in that vein. I think this actually does strengthen DHS's role a bit more than what I had been planning, but I've been working with folks and I'm comfortable with the A24 amendment. I would consider it a friendly amendment.
To the A24 amendment, is there any other questions?
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Rose.
And thank you, Katie. I didn't quite get your notes or my notes, but I hope everybody's clear as far as the oral amendment. And Senator Laurie, I do appreciate your work on this. Again, I just like to stress, I'm as far as the state agency, not very comfortable with, but I do think this is a direct way of going with the steering committee, having it under the purview of DHS, and recognizing, as you said, Senator Laurie, the recommendations from the OLA report are important. So I so move that. Amended A24.
Senator Rosa moves the A24 amendment as orally amended. The amendment is line 1.31 after 15, insert delete lines 32 through 36. Is there any other questions on the amendment? That being said, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. So moved. Are there any other questions or amendments from members? Senator Benson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, page 17, line 19, delete that subdivision and renumber sections accordingly.
Senator Benson moves an oral amendment, and we're going to see if we can repeat it one more time so that the members have it.
Mr. Chair, page 17, line 19, delete subdivision B, the expiration date, and renumber the sections accordingly.
Senator Lori, to the oral amendment.
While I understand the conversation, I will be opposing this amendment. I do think that, additional prohibitions, putting them in statute, we will have control over Minsure. We will have a look at this before it expires. I think it's okay to have the expiration date. I'll be voting against it, but, members, it's not the hill I'm going to die on.
Senator Benson.
And, Mr. Chair, I think one of the things we need to work on is sort of rebuilding the conversation around Minsure. And having this prohibition in place with an expiration sends a signal to the larger audience that's watching this that this might come up in the future. And I would rather have it be prohibited and not have anyone worry that it's going to happen administratively, so that it is very transparent that if this decision is going to be made, it's going to come through the legislature. I think it's important for process as we go forward that this prohibition be permanent and the legislature have the authority to reinstate it if we choose to. And so, members, I would ask for your support on that.
Is there any other questions to the oral amendment? Delete line 17.19. Is there any other questions? With that being said, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. Are there any other questions or amendments to the bill? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify to the bill? With that, Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lori, if you could just go through some of these figures, since you just received this at 8 o'clock this morning, and we're struggling to go through and read some of the assumptions. And
Senator Lori, I think Senator Rosen is asking. Well, Senator Rosen, are you? Are there specific questions or concerns, or would you like Senator Lori to just go over the whole fiscal note?
Just pretty much the fiscal note, Mr. Chair. If you could, just let's just talk about some of the assumptions, and I understand, the Department of Commerce is taken out, but we still have a pretty hefty fiscal note here, and I just wanted to get my hands around it. So if we can,
the lion's share, Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, the lion's share of the fiscal note comes from paying brokers and navigators $70 for each Medicaid and Minnesota Care enrollee. That didn't happen, but brokers didn't get paid for any public program enrollments, and if we're going to pay that, then it's going to cost some more money. And navigators got $25 for assisting a Medicaid enrollee in their application, $70 for assisting a Minnesota Care enrollee. So we're paying navigators and brokers both $70. It is an increase in the compensation for our assisters out there trying to help people gain access to the care that they and their families need. And, I think it is one of the key recommendations that we make sure that we have a compensation structure that works to maintain our assister network, because people rely heavily on our assisters to be able to help them through the system. And so that's where the costs come from. from DHS. My understanding is Minsure needed an FTE for one component. Was it putting together the strategy for paying these, or was it Mr. Albrecht? What was the Minsure FTE needed for? I just got this thing at 8 a.m. myself, and so
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lurie, the FTEs are for administering the broker payments.
That's what I thought. Okay, one FTE for administering that system that's built to try to pay the brokers. So that's really where the costs come from. The lion's share is the $70 application fee for successful enrollments.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Rosen,
just a thought. The A24 amendment on the new steering committee, is there going to be a fiscal note on that? Is that absorbed into the price?
Senator Lord.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, no. This is the executive steering committee that exists today.
It would
be status quo. It would not be have a cost.
Are there any more questions of members on the bill? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is Mr. Albrecht, Senator Lurie. The sort of internal transfer, the Minsure special revenue funds, and then the outflow. When are we going to get a granular look at what's included in that? Is that just the premium withhold, that special revenue piece? I'm looking at page 3 of 14, center of the page, state government special revenue.
Senator Lurie.
In the middle of the page there, the state government special revenue. My understanding of this at this point, and maybe somebody can come out and help me if I get this wrong, but my understanding is that would be the withhold and the money that comes from the CSIO grants from the feds.
And Mr. Chair and
Mr. Albert,
Senator Lurie and Senator Benson, it's not clear at this point whether or not those amounts also include the payments from the Department of Human Services to Minsure. You go to, and I apologize, but we just got this at 8 o'clock this morning, so it's hard to know exactly what those numbers represent. But the discussion under Minsure does make a reference to the amounts that are paid to them by the Department of Human Services.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Lurie,
and Senator Benson, whatever the amounts below here, it is the amount that's in the special revenue fund that Minsure currently operates out of, just moving it into the state government special revenue fund to run it like other agencies. So, I mean, it's a net zero. And it's taking the budget that they currently have and putting it in the proper account to run it as an agency.
But we
can get behind it a little further as we move forward.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lurie, there hasn't been a lot of scrutiny on that number. The spreadsheet that we get, you know, kind of looks like a grocery list with prices next to it. And I don't think we're done looking at that number at this point, and we're sort of blessing this moving forward once we make a decision in this committee, and I am really nervous about that dollar amount and the lack of transparency around that at this point.
Senator Lord. Is there anyone else? Are there any other questions of members? Once again, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify to the bill? With that being said, Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 139 as amended be recommended to pass.
Senator Lurie renews his motion that Senate File 139 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion, or what?
And laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Health Care Services Bill.
Laid over for possible inclusion in the Health Care Omnibus Bill. Just looking at me. With that being said, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You're welcome, Senator Lurie. Senator Benson, Senate File 844.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Let me briefly review the conversation that we had in policy. The bill you see before you is often referred to as Return on Taxpayer Investment. The Pew Foundation calls it the Results First Work, and as a member of this committee, you are well aware we are continually presented with opportunities to spend money to help people. And our challenge is to find a way to evaluate that spending in light of helping our citizens, protecting our taxpayers. And starting in the 1980s, Washington State developed economic modeling to assist their legislature and executive branch making those kinds of decisions. Since then, the program has been adopted by the Pew Foundation, and 17 states currently participate in their economic analysis program. If you review the handouts before you, you can see in color the map of the states that are currently involved. The second would be the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. And if you have a moment, members, to go to the very back and look through some of the evaluations that they've done, that is the output that this committee would be receiving as a result of our participation. So as we look at bills, we would inventory our programs and decide if they were worthy of ongoing funding. And the third handout is from the Pew MacArthur Foundation. It's a review of steps that we need to take. This is one step. This committee, should they choose to support it, would allow us to move forward, hopefully achieve support from the executive branch, from the House, and then have Pew come up and begin the process of data program inventory. And let me see. Members, I do need to make some amendments to this bill, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Absolutely. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first thing we need to do is put this under the committee's purview. So the A1 amendment amends page 1, line 8 to put this under the purview of the Commissioner of Human Services.
So this would make the appropriation go to the Human Services Commissioner,
yes,
to transfer to MMB, but that would keep it in our budget area. In addition, in looking at the fiscal note, I see that there's $56,000. So I'd like to incorporate that and have the line 1.7 change the two $100,000 figures to $156,000.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So that it covers the admin costs of doing this. Is that?
That was my desire as well. I appreciate the incorporation.
Senator Benson moves the A1 amendment as orally amended. Any questions on that? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
And
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, so there are fiscal benefits for this committee. There are operational benefits for this committee. The fiscal note was drafted for two staff. That's what Colorado implemented. There are other states that have done this with single staff. It can either reside in a legislative research body, or it can reside with the budget office in the executive branch. As we've drafted it, this would operate out of the executive branch, but it would require participation from our legislative research departments. So I'm I wish they had only drafted it to one, but I will take the two. That's the biggest fiscal impact we're going to have at this point, and I'm ready to stand for questions.
Any questions of members?
And I do have Kelly Harder from Dakota County here to talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts, if anyone is so inclined.
Mr. Harder, did you have, were you just for questions, or did you have testimony prepared?
Well, Mr. Chair and Committee
Not encouraging testimony,
no,
but if you...
No, no. Mr. Chair, I can read the room, and I appreciate that. And committee members, I would stand for any chairs, but also say that I really want to honor and respect the great work that many of the departments already are doing in cost-benefit analysis, to say it's not to replace that, but how do we augment it and get you all a tool that has greater universality across departments, not just in a singular one, but would stand for any questions.
Any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 844? Seeing none, Senator Benson moves Senate File 844 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Benson. Next, we have Senator Sharon, NEMT. I think we do. I don't see her. We do have one more bill. I could go quick. Madam Chair, I've got Senate File 1457.
Thank you, Senator Lori. Please, I'm sorry, I am a little rusty at this, Mr. Chair.
Good.
I appreciate the opportunity. Members, Senate File 1457, Senator Lori, please proceed.
So Senate File 1457 is a pretty straightforward bill. We, in looking over some of the statutes, we found this authority for the Commissioner of Human Services to transfer funds between the MA account and the Home and Community-Based Services Transitions account. We don't think that authority to transfer appropriated monies between accounts is needed any longer. DHS doesn't have any problem with doing this. We'd like to strike that authority, just clean up the statutes. Stand for questions.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, there's no fiscal note?
There is no fiscal note.
And because there's no fiscal impact?
There is no fiscal impact, but it is, authority to transfer between accounts, and so it is a fiscal bill, but they aren't going to transfer, and we're going to just remove their authority.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Lori. Any questions from members? Any comment from the public? Okay, seeing none, Senator Lori moves Senate File 1457 to be
recommended to pass.
Recommended to pass.
8-0.
No, not late.
Is this the one that
And so then that would go, oh, okay. So it would go to Finance
this
Committee.
This will go to the larger Finance Committee?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Lori moves Senate File 1457 be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I have my own copy.
All right, Senator. The Senate File 1292, non-emergency medical transportation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the chance to come before you again on this long journey that we've had to create reforms to the non-emergency medical transportation service. For those of you who may not remember, this is a service, a transportation service that is provided to persons who need assistance making it to their medical appointments, whether it's to their regular physician or to a specialist or for kidney dialysis or any form of medical care. It is only for medical transportation. It's not utilized for any other purpose. We have been working for a long time on improvements to the non-emergency medical transportation program. Just very briefly in context, the redesign of non-emergency medical transportation of old was really put in place to try to get control over the costs of this service. And it was thought at one time that if we centralized the decision-making process about modes of transportation, we could maybe get some cost savings by making certain people were taking the right level of service for the need that the person has, given that they had the right under their medical assistance benefits to have their transportation costs covered. That process initially seemed to be a good idea, but as in all things, as it rolled out and was modified and changed, it started to have all sorts of difficulties. We had sort of incentives perversely created in the review process that really stimulated more an unnecessary review than was necessary, created a lot of difficulties for disabled people to have to struggle with a centralized broker system to get the correct level of transportation that they needed, missing appointments, changing the level of service based on a phone conversation and limited understanding of the unique character of a client and the unique nature of transportation throughout the state, what's available and what's not available in various parts of the state. There are many other issues that we are concerned about with related, and that, of course, is trying to control any kind of fraudulent activity that would occur in the billing practices for non-emergency medical transportation. And that's just some of what it is that we've been working on to improve over a long period of time. I only go through that, Senator Lori, because this is about an eight-year project, and I've discovered that as I've gone through the committees that people don't remember what the really difficult situation was that we have worked so hard to improve. And I want this committee to know that there's been a task force that has been chaired by Sue Abderholden and has been representatives of our counties throughout the state, providers, the departments of transportation, the departments of human services, and legislators who have worked over very consistently and effectively to make many recommendations and changes, many of which were formed in a bill that moved through committees last year. But today we come forward with some of the last of those provisions, not completely finished, but almost finished with a set of recommendations, although we will continue to monitor the system closely as a task force. I would also articulate that for today, the purposes are to fund some of the changes that have occurred as a result of the way that we've made improvements to the program. So what you have in front of you is a bill and a fiscal note that accommodates to the language of the bill. We add a definition of non-emergency medical transportation to the MnDOT statutes so that that through their evaluation process, they can make changes to the provider standards. The provider standards for the vehicles and the providers, making certain that what is utilized as a transportation service under certain modes meets safety standards for disabled persons. And the disability can be physical or mental disability. There are changes to the trip documentation requirements in this bill. Those changes, again, are a part of what we are continuing to work on to improve our capacity to make certain that we're paying for the services that we intend to pay for and not more. The bill creates a special protected transportation mode, And I think Ms. Abderholden would love to talk to you more about that. It is that particular interest that brought her to the task force. I don't think that she knew that that interest would create the consequence that it did for her in terms of having to chair the committee and to stay with it the entire time, but it did. And we did create the special protection transport, and we added safety standards for that protected transport. In your fiscal note on pages 10 and 11, you'll see references to the cost that occurred in this bill because of the restoration of the 4.5% cut to provider payment rates. And these provider payment rates were cut as a part of the contribution that the providers of medical transportation made to deficit reduction. RUCA is referred to in the fiscal note. RUCA was a reform that we moved into special transportation at one time that recognized that there were differences between the amount of unloaded miles, what we call miles in a vehicle where there is no passenger, in the rural area, a greater number of those miles as opposed to a metropolitan area, which is more dense. In this bill, that concept is the RUCA number is used as a base for the funding formula, but RUCA in essence is eliminated as a funding mechanism. Five adds payment rates for the new modes. There are seven new modes. Let me just step back from reporting on the bill and give you context. We had an audit done, remember, of this system. I don't know if you all remember that. One of the main recommendations of the auditor for non-emergency medical transportation was a single administrative structure. These seven new modes are the development of a single administrative structure, eliminated what was formerly referred to as ATS and STS. So now instead of those terms, what you hear about are seven modes of transportation, and they are clearly defined in order to assist a person to determine where the person should be placed in terms of their needs. And in addition, we reduce the number of times the client has to have that mode reviewed but for accuracy, with very rare exceptions, which I'll explain later. Those new modes are client reimbursement, so a client can be reimbursed if they use their own vehicle, volunteer services, unassisted, assisted, lift equipment or ramp, protected, which is the new mode, and stretcher modes. And page 5 of your fiscal notes is directed towards describing the impact fiscally of the changes changes to a single administrative structure with seven modes. We also require prior authorization. As I said, we really made modifications to the frequency that the prior authorization process and review process would occur, which saves a lot of money. And the required prior authorization still is in place for trips that are over 30 miles for a family physician visit, for a traditional visit, and 60 miles for a specialist. And these fee increases that are referenced in the bill are in place in July 1st of 2016 or 17. I can't remember when it is. 2016. I think it's 2016. So that, in essence, is a review of what is in the bill and of the how to reference you for the fiscal note. And I would offer the microphone to Ms. Abderholden to make further explanations and comments and answer questions.
Ms. Abderholden.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. First, I really want to thank Senator Sharon for actually volunteering, and then, of course, you couldn't unvolunteer from this task force because of your knowledge in this area. And I will say that I think we really have come a long way in terms of everyone kind of agreeing and how to move forward, which really makes it even more important that if we can to try to move this whole issue forward so that we don't have to keep meeting, frankly. One thing I do want to mention is that I actually have some concerns about the fiscal note, which I'll raise, but one of the reasons we wanted to increase the personal mileage is that it's been so low that it's been really difficult for people who are living in poverty to actually drive their own vehicle or have a family member drive them. And we're really hoping that by increasing the personal mileage rate that we will have more people using their personal vehicles, which is the cheapest, frankly, than other types of transportation. The second thing is by increasing the volunteer mileage, and this would be voluntary because if you get, under the IRS rules, if you get paid more than what's allowed in the IRS and you go up to a certain amount, that can become taxable income, and so we don't want volunteers to have to do that, but they could choose to take that higher rate if they decided that was a good idea. It would be really great to move to these new modes of transportation so we wouldn't have the ATS and STS. I think that would help move this whole system forward in a much easier way. I do want to mention that, you know, during the recession, we did reduce the provider rates by 4.5%. They are not really asking for an increase. They're really asking to be whole so that we eliminate that 4.5% reduction that's been in place for several years. This is where I'm questioning the fiscal note, because if you do the new modes of transportation, you don't then add 4.5% to them. You just don't cut them by 4.5%. And so I'm wondering if the fiscal note is actually higher than it necessarily should be, because we were just setting the new modes of transportation. I think it's difficult in the fiscal note to decide, well, do we eliminate the current rates and eliminate the 4.5% reduction to them, or do we do the new modes, or do we do all of that? And I think, to be honest, I had a very difficult time trying to decipher that from this year's fiscal note, but I just wanted to kind of put that out there, that that may be an increased rate or an increased cost that maybe shouldn't be there. Finally, let me just add a little thing about protected transport, since that was the only reason I came to this issue. As you know, we have many police and ambulance drivers who are very frustrated with having driving someone with a mental illness who's in crisis for very long distances, especially in the rural area. It's also really difficult on the individual. You know, you are having a mental health crisis, and you have vehicles showing up in your neighborhood outside of your apartment and your house with the lights and the noise and everything like that, and then people see you, especially if it's a police car, see you get into the back of a vehicle handcuffed, and all you're having is a mental health crisis. You're not committing a crime. Protected transport is something that's being talked about across the country. We'd be one of the first states to really move in that direction, where someone is transported with dignity and respect. You have an unmarked vehicle. There's no whirring lights or anything like that. You have two people who are trained in de-escalation and on how to help someone with a mental illness in crisis. You get Medicaid reimbursement at a much lower cost than you would in an ambulance. And, of course, police cars are not reimbursed. And I think it just makes it easier. And in the rural areas, that sheriff car is not out of service for that period of time, nor is the ambulance. So I think it really is, for the individual, a much better way to go, and frankly for communities in our healthcare system as well. And that is part of the race of the new modes of transportation. So in closing, I just want to say we really do have a good committee. People have worked very hard to come up with the solution, and as you know, it has not been easy to get there, and would just really encourage you to move this forward.
Thank you. And I forgot.
Senator Sharon.
I have an amendment.
Yes.
I do have an amendment.
The A4 amendment?
The A4 amendment, yes.
Senator Sharon moves the A4 amendment. On that amendment, Senator Sharon.
Thank you. This bill also went through transportation. And the reason for that, I mentioned earlier that we did make some changes to the Minnesota Department of Transportation statute in order to do the work that they do as a part of non-emergency medical transportation, which is doing the review and licensing of these vehicles to make certain that they are safe for the and capable of doing the transportation level that is required of them in these modes. This amendment simply clarifies that the fee, although we're not talking about that in this committee, there is a fee that's going to be collected in this process of looking over in this inspection process that the department is paid
for
by the
providers. This is a technical amendment to make sure that the Department of Transportation has the authority to use the funds
and
just
keep
clean
the
up
funds.
And
keep very the much funds. Specifically keep
Any
the funds
Any other questions
for this
on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you. That completes our
So,
presentation.
Ms. Abderholden, to your point, I take particular note when people say we might find savings in the fiscal note, and so I started reading a little bit. I see in page 5 on the third paragraph there, it actually talks about the sunset of the 4.5% rate reduction. And they do say that since the 2014 NEMT data reflects the lower base after the 4.5 rate reduction has been applied, the fiscal impact of this sunset has already been accounted for in the first section, which is the new modes, of the fiscal note that establishes this new rate. But then it goes on to say that in Section D, it projects the cost of ending the 4.5% rate reduction on the ambulance services. So I think they only booked the increased costs for the ambulance side, which, if I'm not mistaken, it's not part of the new modes. It's when an ambulance itself is actually needed. Does that answer your question, or should we bring somebody up and ask if there are additional savings to be leveraged?
Mr. Chairman, that helps. I mean,
okay.
This has been
it's
not an easy fiscal note,
no.
I'm going to say.
Hey, at least you got it on the 3rd. I mean, I was sitting there. I had mine at 8 a.m. trying to.
Okay, so they're just, Mr. Chairman, so they're just saying that it's only for the ambulances that they're.
That's how I read it.
Okay.
Should we, I mean, is there somebody who compiled this fiscal note? That is correct. I see.
Okay.
So that is correct. We have not been charged in the new modes for the removal of the 4.5 rate reduction. So in Section 1, the new modes, you know, I do notice that in the estimate, it looks like the client miles themselves account for, you know, a majority of the miles that are paid for. And as such, the increase that is there is over half of the cost of the new modes as well. I know, Ms. Abderholden, you did talk about the need for that to encourage people to use their own car when able. Maybe you could go into that a little bit more.
And Mr. Chairman, I think part of the problem is that we don't know. You know, it's always hard, as you know, it's always hard to predict what the savings are. And so if those individuals are currently, for example, in the metro area taking a cab, but a family member would drive them if they had higher mileage, it's really hard to account for those savings. So we're hoping that, you know, after a year or two, we'd have a much better sense of how many people, especially new people coming into the system, how we can really encourage and push them to use their own vehicle or their family member's vehicle to see cost savings for the future as well.
A pretty familiar problem for us. We have to buy something and hope that it provides savings that we'll never see on our budget books. Senator Benson?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Abderholden, the total units of transportation consumed in 2014, I'm having a hard time finding where they're dispersed through this fiscal note. We sort of have this call-out section, and then I'm not seeing. I would think with the change in the mileage rate, there would be a calculation that showed more client miles and a decrease in the unassisted transportation or something like that. I'm having a really hard time tracking because what you said should be true. But we can't just gross up the numbers and not explain it. I am having a really hard time wrapping my head around this fiscal note. And Mr. Chair, and if I may, Senator Sharon, the volunteer reimbursement being $1.13, people would have to be issued 1099s for the difference between the IRS allowed rates. It seems like we're doing a lot of paperwork. Do we have evidence that $1.13 versus the 56 cents, I think, is the IRS authorized reimbursement, is that going to actually be perceived as value for these people? Because if you get a 1099, it means you can't do a standard filing. You have to file a Schedule C and deduct your gas and all of those things. I'm not sure that a $1.13 reimbursement has as much value as it might appear. and did that conversation come up?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Abderholden?
Senator Benson, it was discussed, and it was mainly from, frankly, some of the rural counties, because if someone is driving a long distance and they can't really stay there, so they have to drive back, they have those non-load miles, which can be, frankly, kind of costly for people. They had a difficult time trying to figure out so how many people would actually avail themselves of this. And, of course, you can earn up to a certain amount. What is it, like $250 or something like that before
$500.
Filing? So that you could have some, for some people, that might be enough of an incentive for them to, you know, come forward and be a volunteer driver. But they would obviously be monitoring how high of a reimbursement they got so as not to go over that amount.
Okay.
But, again, these things, Mr. Chairman, It is really hard to know if we change this exactly what will happen. It's very hard to predict people's behaviors.
So the distinction between client and volunteer, I noticed when we were talking about the client, we added acquaintance. You know, how do we distinguish and make sure that people who are able to drive themselves, you know, don't just say, well, I like that 113 a lot better than the 45. I'm going to call my, you know, my nephew a volunteer instead of categorizing it as driving myself, and I'm going to get the 113 rate instead of the 45-cent rate.
Mr. Chairman, I was just
Ms. Abderholden.
So the counties are the ones who organize the volunteer drivers. So they have a set list of people that they use, or they use a CAP agency that has a set list. So it isn't like you could say, oh, now my nephew is going to be my volunteer driver. It goes through a system in order to do that.
Okay, you have to be a registered volunteer with the county, assigned to a specific individual with transportation needs, or... is it a roster that anyone on NEMT has access to, or what is the link between this volunteer and the individual needing the transport?
Mr. Chair and committee members, Nancy Zaleski, representing Minnesota Intercounty Association. My understanding in rural Minnesota is that they contract with CAP agencies generally, so it's generally run through the agency. So there is a system for this. Is my general understanding of how it works.
And do the, Ms. Zaleski, do the CAP agencies try to, is it a friend that's doing it? I mean, a CAP agency, if somebody comes forward and still says, you know, hey, my nephew, you know, go talk to the CAP agency, get on this list, and then you can drive me to my medical appointments and we'll get a $113. And, I mean, CAP agencies are, you know, they're there to help people, and I can see them saying, yeah, we'll put you on this list, and then you get a $113. I don't, you know, I'm just asking questions. Yeah. I don't know the answer to.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson, on this maybe.
It's to this point, if you and your best friend have a lunch date every month and it coincides with your doctor's appointment, now your best friend can get on the list and get a $113 for something. I just feel like we're getting close to creating a perverse incentive, and so maybe we can address that here.
Thank you. I don't know exactly. This is the case right now. I mean, we're not talking about something that isn't. There are all sorts of things like this that people maneuver around in this system that we're trying to pay attention to. So, you know, what? Excuse me.
So then there should be an answer to how this volunteer list works. And is there a link between the volunteers and the person needing transport? You know, how does it work today? I mean, to me, when you say this is how it works today, then we should be able to get answers to how it works today.
Mr. Chairman, we'll follow up with that.
That'd be helpful.
I don't know all the specifics off the top of my head.
Any other questions of members? Senator Sharon, additional thoughts on that?
No, we're just conferring about making certain that we get back to the committee on that.
Yeah, please do.
With more clarity.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience wish to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1292? Seeing none, Senator Sharon?
Then thank you. I guess I would say to you, Senator Lori, as well as other members of the committee, and what I would say to the whole legislature is this: the problem with a long-term, a big problem that requires a lot of people to be involved in creating a solution is that it takes a long time to get this group to be cohesive, to trust one another, and to come forward with an agreed proposal like this. And so I know the time between this and when the heat was in this legislature and the demand for reform was coming from this legislature is a long time. And because of that, and the heat's not here anymore, I don't want you to misunderstand the significant importance of this piece of legislation to the providers who really have been struggling long before we had to do that rate reduction to them. And this is a group that has helped pay for that deficit, just like we when we borrowed from the schools and we took money from other sources. And it's even though we've had some restoration of that during the last budget, we did not make this group whole. And it really puts stress, especially in the rural area, on the capacity of these providers to continue the service and meet the requirements we've placed on them to maintain licensing and quality. And so I just really want to advocate and remind the committee about that.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. And then, so Senator Sharon moves Senate File 1292 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. Any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sharon. And that concludes our agenda for today. We'll be getting back together tomorrow at 8:30. And we will, in room 107, we're going to go all day. We're going to break for lunch at noon, have an hour off, come back at 1, and we're going to roll. We got a lot of bills to get through.
Yeah.
We're going to start with Senate File 825, the governor's budget bill. So what we're going to do is step through the governor's budget bill, the change pages that are part of the supplemental budget. We're going to have public testimony on the entire governor's budget. Whoever wishes to offer advice, we're going to accept comments and questions from members and then amendments from members to the governor's budget bill. But just to be clear, that is not the omnibus bill that will be traveling. It is the governor's budget bill. Amendments are proper, but it is not the vehicle that we'll be using. So we'll have another opportunity to have vehicle and amendments that are needed for that. A reminder, if you have amendments to offer, get them fiscal noted, work with council and make sure that we understand the cost of amendments that you might wish to add to Senate File 825. The anticipation is we will be working on that probably right up until the break. If it takes longer, we'll continue, but that just extends the evening. But we've kind of, for planning purposes, set that whole morning block aside to work through that. And again, if it takes longer, we'll keep rolling. So with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you, members.